Welcome, welcome, welcome to Armchair Expert. I'm Dak Shepherd. I'm joined by Miniature Mouse.
Squeak, squeak, squeak.
Squeak, squeak.
So stupid.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
I'm a cowboy. On this steel horse I ride, and I'm wanted.
Wanted.
Dead or alive.
Wow.
Seen a million faces.
We're gonna keep going.
And I rocked them all. That's right. John Bon Jovi's here.
I cannot believe it.
Oh, John Bon Jovi's here.
I grew up listening to JBJ, fantasizing in my bedroom about
him. What a day for you.
And his buns.
Best buns in the biz. We talked about nearly everything with him. The only thing I regret is I didn't ask him what his bun routine was.
We'll have to have him back on for that.
Okay, just for that, like a 5-minute interview.
Yeah.
Now, as you guys know, John Bon Jovi is an American singer, songwriter, record producer, philanthropist, and actor. Bon Jovi is best known as the founder and frontman of the Grammy Award winning rock band Bon Jovi. John has released 15 studio albums with his band to date and has sold over 130 million albums worldwide. He has a new album out right now called 2020. I think everyone could remember that title quite easily. Please enjoy John Bon Jovi. We are supported by ZipRecruiter. Now, hiring is a huge challenge for everybody. I can't even imagine how I would begin to look for a Monica. It couldn't be done. But if I had to try, I would definitely use ZipRecruiter because finding the right candidate for your job takes a long time. There are too many applicants, and ZipRecruiter makes that incredibly easy. Leave your hiring to the one place that makes finding qualified candidates fast and easy. ZipRecruiter.com/Dax. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. ZipRecruiter makes hiring efficient and effective with features like screening questions to filter candidates and all-in-one dashboard where you can review and rate your candidates. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, armchairies can go to ZipRecruiter.com/Dax. That's ZipRecruiter.com/DAX. ZipRecruiter.com/Dax. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. We are supported by BetterHelp. If you think you may be depressed or are feeling anxious, stressed, or overwhelmed, BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are trained to listen and to help. Talk with your counselor in a private online environment at your own convenience from wherever you're comfortable. I'll just say in my own recent past, I can't emphasize the value enough of being able to tell everybody all the things.
I have an appointment tomorrow and I asked for extra time.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Now, BetterHelp counselors have expertise in a broad range of areas such as anxiety, grief, depression, relationships, trauma, loss, and more. BetterHelp can give you access to help that may be not available in your area. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs and get matched with your counselor in under 48 hours. Easily schedule secure video or phone sessions with your therapist, plus exchange unlimited messages. Join the 1 million plus people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced BetterHelp counselor. BetterHelp is an affordable option, and armchairies get 10% off their first month with the discount code DAX. Get started today at BetterHelp.com/Dax. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Dax. Talk to a therapist online and get help.
He's an armchair expert. He's an armchair expert. He's an armchair expert.
Holy shit, dude.
Wow, in the... Well, not
it's
in the
really
flesh,
exciting.
But
this
much.
Is, I gotta tell you, we interview a lot of people. This is very, very exciting. First of all, you're fucking gorgeous. My goodness, look at this face.
I
it's
know.
Fucking Thank insane. God. Oh,
I'm glad you guys have been drinking. It's early.
Doesn't he kind of look like Matt Damon, like I said?
Yeah, so Monica's main crushes in life are Matt Damon and Ben Affleck and you. And she thinks there's some blend, some carryover with you and Damon. I see it a little bit.
Okay, I don't mind that. You know, I remember when people would ask me, like, who should play you in the movie? I'd say Angelina Jolie. You know, you know, I don't know who does the duck lips better, me or her, but, you know. If but you got Damon going there, so that's all.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you're in really high company, I'd say. I mean, Ben Affleck, I'm at. Yeah. You know what's interesting is you've been at it for so long, but you started so young that it's, in my mind, and I know in Monica's as well, it's a little deceptive. Like, I got to say, I was like, oh, he's only 58. You've just been doing it for 30 years, but also you're still young. It's kind of,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do. I had a record deal when I was 21. It's the same record deal.
No kidding.
Yeah, I've been with the same label since I'm 21 years old. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that I've been doing this longer than I wasn't doing this, you know?
Yeah.
That's a weird moment, isn't it?
You know, when you're making records, what is it, 37 years now? That's a long, long time. With the same label, it's amazing.
All right, I'm going to ask you a really gross question I want you to be honest about. So I am around a 100,000th as famous as you, but nevertheless, I'm a little bit famous. And it's now been about, I think, 17 years of it. And this is so gross to admit to you, but I'm going to say it. When I look back in my life, I think I've always been famous. Is that the grossest thing you ever heard? It's like, I actually don't remember not, even
not
though it's only
famous.
Been. Yes.
Well, I remember not being famous, but I think that the one thing, well, you know, when you're so young, your scale of what famous is also was much different.
Oh, big time, big
you
time.
Know? So you thought you were big if you were playing in a bar. You know, you thought you were big at the high school dance. So your levels of what famous is change every step along the way. I remember playing in a bar because you were playing your own music, and this is in 1980. I'm just graduating high school. So in my eyes, we were already big because we were playing where the original bands played. I didn't go to my prom. I was opening for Southside Johnny somewhere in Freehold, New Jersey. So I thought that was big. Every step along the way, you still couldn't pay the bills, but you thought right. that was big, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you keep going until you get to a place where you can finally say, well, I guess, you know, now I sort of made it. But you didn't really make it the other 18 steps along the way. You just thought you did.
Well, isn't it that the ignorance is the gift? So, yes. So when I look back in my memory and I think of how famous I thought I was from that TV show, it allowed me to walk in and audition for a movie like, you better believe you're going to give me this.
Right,
I'm the most
exactly.
famous guy in America.
Exactly. You know, it's that kind of, I wish, you know, I wish we still all had those stones, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now I just have doubt. Now I'm like, I don't know if I can act anymore. I don't
exactly.
know if I can do anything.
Now you're full of doubt. Yeah. Now you're like, oh, I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can handle it anymore. Yeah. When you're young, you're bulletproof and your sense of will is so big. I can just will this to happen and you think it will. You know, it's crazy.
Now, growing up in New Jersey, first of all, I love you on Stern. You're always the greatest interview. I think it's adorable you guys are so close. And I loved hearing him bitch about inducting you into the Hall of Fame for 6 months leading up to it. It was like every episode he lamented that. When you would hear that, would it make you laugh or did you start feeling guilty?
A little of both, because I do know him so well. If you know him, you know that the guy that's off mic is completely different than the one on the mic.
Yeah.
And the backstory is, and I'm sure you've heard it, but it is true. When I called him on the phone and I said, I have to come over to your house to see you today, you know, at first he thinks, are you okay? And then it was like, you're not coming to my house. And I'm like, well, I am coming to your house. So when are you going to get there? Long story short, we finally negotiated the deal. And he said, you have to meet me at this location and be in the back seat of my car. Because when I come out, I'm going to tell the driver to keep rolling. So this was like a mob meeting. You know, he's got his driver in a car. I got a driver in a car. I tell his driver to get out of the car. And there's no R in that. You know, get out of the car. And I get in the car. And then he comes in the back seat.
This is real. This happened in the back
seat. Everything I'm telling you. He closes the door in the back seat of his car. And I tell him what it's all about. And I says, and honest to God, you're my first and only choice. And he said, I'd been asked a whole lot of times by a whole lot of people, but you're the only one I can't turn down. I'm in. I said, thank you very much. It was an emotional little moment. I got out of the car to leave. And I went home and I called my manager. And if you know anything in the music business, Irving Azoff, you know that name is.
I don't.
He's a legendary manager. And he says, He said, yes, no problem. I says, he said, absolutely yes. He goes, did you tell him it's in Cleveland? I go, no. No. I said, that's what I pay you for.
And I think that's where the rubber met the road in this whole thing. It's occurring to him that he was going to be flying to Cleveland. It all
that
unraveled.
He had to sleep in a hotel in Cleveland. It scarred him. But I told him, I said, Howard, you don't got to bring a passport to come to Cleveland. It's
okay. Right. There's no immigration line you'll stand in for hours. Now, could this be true? Because I only read Wikipedia. I have two little kids, so I only have so much time. But is it possible that your mother was actually a Marine and a Playboy bunny? Is that apocryphal or is that real?
No, it's true. It's true.
No kidding.
Yeah, my folks met in the Marine Corps. Yeah, yeah. She was like right out of the poster, you know, the whole I want you. And then when the club opened in New York, she was one of the very first bunnies. Yeah.
Like a cocktail waitress.
Cocktail waitress, not the magazines, but cocktail waitress in the era of Sinatra and the whole thing, early 60s. So she was married to my dad. I was born and she was working there. Yeah.
And so, yeah, she must have nightly come home and told your dad, like, oh, my God, Sinatra did this and Dean Martin did that.
You know, yeah, I'm sure the stories were much better than I'd ever heard. But, you know, in truth, you know, you see those pictures and I might be a rock and roll star, but I got a feeling that the entire 60s parenting experience was much different than mine or yours. Yeah. Oh.
There's an article I reference all the time that was in the New York Times where they actually broke down how much time 50s, 60s housewife spent with the children. And today's working mother is spending more time with her kids than a housewife of the 50s and 60s did. So that just gives you a sense of like what kind of supervision we had, which was absent.
You know, the parental line was come home when the streetlights go on. And, you know, chances of, I don't know about your dad, but mine ever coming to a game that I was playing in, forget that. You know, they drove with a six pack on the front seat while they were driving. They're smoking and drinking in those big cars that could have fit eight people at any time. You know, the big front seat, the big back seat. And, you know, it's a whole different time. What memories.
Yeah. What memories. We're here.
And we are here. That is the one good thing. Yeah, yeah.
Now, what kind of kid were you in junior high? Because your music starts around 13, I guess. So that's junior high. Were you popular? Were you likable? Were you athletic? Were you always this fucking good looking?
No. When I was 13-ish, that's when you really just put down the broomstick and tried to learn to play. But by the time I could even pretend to play, it was more like 16. And I'd have a little backyard band and play at the block dance and the dance, the high school. Wildly popular, no, because it was a very small clique of kids who played music and not athletic, because by the time you picked up a guitar, I was done with athletics. Like I'd played up until, you know, 13, 14, and then you found music and then that was the end of that. So my idea of going to high school was just begged to get out. I knew I had another path. Even then, my three best buddies joined the Navy and I got the call and I busted the guy's balls on the phone. I said, does the uniform come in any different colors? Can I wear a straight leg pant? You know, and there was no way I was interested in going to the service, but the only way out for my three pals in this wonderful little, you know, blue collar town that we lived in was to join. But even at that early age, I knew what I was going to do.
Yeah. The people I knew, friends of mine growing up who got really good at guitar, it's a lot of time in your bedroom by yourself. So to me, there was always a really high parallel with dudes that were probably inclined just towards depression and that they felt safe in that room and they would prefer to put in that time in that room by themselves. Have you seen that parallel at all?
I didn't know that I had that. I wasn't afraid of going out and messing up in the backyard and screaming into a microphone. Yeah, I think I gravitated towards singing more because A, no one else wanted to do it, and B, I knew everybody else was becoming a better guitar player than I was, so I was always the second to third guy, you know, to be playing the guitar as well as they were. But interesting, as my youngest son is starting to play, and he goes to the damn thing five times a day and would rather sit in his room than go out and just BS with his buddies. So I don't know that it's depression as much as it's just like, I've found a new key to the universe and I know what it can do. You know, that's the thing. It's not depression as much as once in a while you think of that thing as the Harry Potter's wand, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. For me, pursuing something creative and other friends of mine who are creative, it also is a kind of great sense of control. If you have very little control as a young person, and you can master something, and you can do something other people can't, and you can make this thing have a predictable outcome, there is some comfort in that. It's like a way to grab a bit of control and execute. There's something rewarding, I think, about that when you're younger.
Well, it certainly gave me focus. Mm-hmm. You know, I could tell you that at 16, 17, 18, walking every day to high school with the bass player in the band, and I knew what I was going to do. We're going to go down to Asbury Park. I'm going to play in this bar. We're going to go here, and I'm going to rehearse this band like crazy, and this is, you know, how I'm going to grow. But by the time I was 18, I stopped playing other people's music. At 18 already, I saw there was only one road, and that was if you didn't start writing your own or at least being in an original band, the cover band circuit wasn't the future. So even by 18, I was done. I knew what would happen.
Who played a role at that point, inspiration-wise?
There was a neighbor, a man across the street, young, hip guy, you know, much older than me, but younger than my parents, married, younger kids. And he played in a lounge band. He played, you know, weddings and lounges. So I went over there having met him through my mom. He was willing to teach me a couple of chords on the guitar. And the first time he tried to show me, it's not easy, you know, and I went home and I didn't practice enough. So I went back a second week. I said, yeah, show me again. I'm working hard at it. And he shows me again. And then I come back and I don't practice. And I show up the third time and he curses me out. He says, don't waste my fucking time. He says, you know, if you're going to do this, you're going to do it. And if you're not going to do it, just don't waste my time. See you later. And the lesson was over. Probably the greatest thing that ever happened, because now I was scared stiff and I wanted to do it. And so when I came back the fourth week, I started to develop those calluses and I tried really hard to learn how to play the House of the Rising Sun and we chipped away at the stone. So the guy, his name was Al Perrineau, and he passed away. Up in that moment in time, he took on the other kid across the street from him and a little kid from down the block who was a couple years younger. That younger kid was a kid named Snake Sabo from a band called Skid Row.
No fucking way.
And so he took me and Snake and we both made records.
No!
And the third kid went and became a lawyer and, you know, got his life together. But he took two kids who didn't have anything else to do. And, you know, we both ended up making records.
Now, you're incredibly charitable and we're going to get into all that. You're really philanthropic. I mean, is it things like that where you go like, oh, shit, I guess I too wouldn't be here without this generous stranger?
Absolutely. You know, thank God that Al Perrineau, you know, lived next door and he's passed now 25 years ago. We used to have this we still do. If you tour with the band and you do two consecutive world tours, you don't miss any legs of it. So it's very hard to get one. You get what is in essence our Elvis TCB. And it's a little Superman logo made of diamonds. It's only this big. And it has the Slippery When Wet logo on it. And I made them back in the Slippery album for the closest band party. Anyhow, when Al passed, mine went in the coffin.
Oh,
you know,
man.
Like these things are, you know, very special to the very few people who get them in the organization. They never changed. You know, they could have been all big bling by now, but they're this little thing. He was that important in my life.
How many have you given out of those? Do you know?
Yeah, about 120 in the last 130, maybe in 35 years.
So there are 120 people who have been with you around the world twice and never showed up sick.
Right. It's a big deal in our little world to earn one.
This is already getting at what I'm curious about, which is the sustainability of your thing. I'm so interested when Howard interviews musicians because there's so many predictable pitfalls, right? I mean, so many people succumb to the exact same stuff. And it's like, it's ego and identity and youth and all this stuff. And something as silly and could seem insignificant as that, it's just a statement, which is like, yeah, we're rock stars, but you fucking punch your time clock, you're dependable, you show up. There's an element to it that I just dig. You know, I'm sure there's a million little things you did along the way that created the sustainability.
Oh, yeah. Look, there's always another guy that's right outside that door waiting for your job, as you knew, acting or singing or doing podcasts. It's no matter what it is, there's always another guy that's hungrier or going to outwork you. So in order to achieve success, you could get there and have one record or one movie. You can get lucky. When you start sticking around after 20 years, then I'm going to pay attention. When you're here for nearly 40, then you've got my respect and attention. You know, yeah. So this is not an easy job.
No.
It's not easy.
Let me back up. I love Wanted. My favorite line of the song is, "I've seen a million faces and I rocked them all." It's the only brag I've ever fucking loved, because what a gift to rock someone is. You should say it, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. What we experience on a 0% level is we perform for about 5,000 people. We do live shows. It's so exhilarating. And then you leave and you go to this hotel room and you're like, wait, I was awesome a second ago and now I'm alone. And it is a very interesting thing to navigate. And I just wonder for you, is like you being like in Tokyo, I imagine, at some arena, and there just isn't going to be a high that competes with that. And then you're back in the hotel room. And I just wonder, like, what strategies did you develop over the years to manage that?
I think a part of it was just what you said, that challenge of the roar of the crowd, the ringing still in your ears. You do a runner, so you get in the car sweating, you get back to the hotel, and then it's just like, boom, you and the ringing. So what are you supposed to do? You know, you're not going to pace around your room for 3 or 4 more hours. You had to find things to calm yourself down. So whether we would go to the bar or what have you, we would do that for many years. But as I got older, to be honest with you, as hard as I work, it became harder.
Oh, really?
The physicality.
Oh, like your voice, keeping it in shape and all that. Yeah, just lasting. So would you go on like vocal rest on tour as you got older and stuff like
that? I never understood vocal rest. I think you got to, I personally believe in using it, but warming up, warming down, not drinking, you know, those kinds of things, because it is a muscle at the end of the day. Up until 50, I was bulletproof. After 50, it became hard work.
Uh-huh. Okay, you're going to give us advice whether you want to or not. It's going to happen. Two things. In addition to just the impressiveness of the longevity of the actual band, how did you not get into trouble publicly at any point that I'm aware of with women or drugs? How does one do that in your occupation? Why are you different? What is it?
I didn't get caught. And
that's the most honest answer
I've ever heard.
I was never a fan of drugs. So fortunately for me, that was never appealing. I think I had a bad experience smoking weed at like 13 or so, and it just scared me off of drugs, thank God. So I never went down that road. And when my guys did, and I watched what it did to lives like theirs or guys around me, it was pretty much an easy decision to make. You know, mm-hmm. I never hated myself enough to keep doing that.
Yeah. Okay. Because he's from New Jersey and you must love him. Like, what was Springsteen's relevance in your life, if any, during all this time? Because he has just now made like a perfect album and he's done all these other things and he's from New Jersey. Was he somebody that you admired?
Of course. Sure. Beyond words. I was just with him Sunday.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, we get together and play each other our new records and stuff, you know. And he's Bruce. You know, everybody knows that he's the man. First time I met him was while he was in that difficulty between Born to Run and Darkness on the Edge of Town. And I was a little kid. I was playing in a bar, and he was in the back of this bar, which was connected to like an athletic club. So I couldn't have been but 17 years old. And there's pictures then short time after that, but right in the same era, he jumps up on stage with me and I'm still in high school.
No.
What?
Yeah. Oh, wait, listen, I don't know that there's any connection between you two. I'm just thinking you're both from New Jersey and I can't believe that that's...
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
So the first time that I got to play with him, he jumped up and sang. And there's a picture and I'm still in high school. So imagine me, I'm going back to high school the next day and kids are like, you know, last night I had a six pack and I was parked in the back of the mud pits over here and making out with Jane and what'd you do? Yeah, me and Bruce Springsteen were down to the, you know, Asbury Park playing. But that's what I'm saying. By the time I was in high school, Southside Johnny was producing demos of a band that I was in called The Rest. And there was always a chance you'd be meeting one of the Jukes or one of the E Street Band around, because there were so many of them and there were so few bars down there that were playing original music. So it made the impossible seem very possible, you know, because on my walls would be the posters of Led Zeppelin and Aerosmith and Skynyrd and The Queen and all that kind of circus magazine.
Yeah.
But those guys were 25 miles away, a decade plus older than you, making records. And so it made them seem like, you know, the impossible were real.
Yeah. Yeah. To see someone in 3D that you look up to and recognize, oh, real dude. I'm a real dude.
And they're writing songs about the places where you live and the things that you do. All of it made it very real. And so my parents, God bless them, you know, they, like I said, 16, 17, 18, they would say, if you were in a bar, at least we knew where you were.
Right, right.
And the drinking age was 18. So that too helped immensely because, you know, you could sneak in at 16, 17 and say, yeah, I'm 18. And if you remember, IDs didn't have pictures on them.
Right, it's like a piece of paper, right? Someone typed it up on a piece of paper, You could just easily slide it right in your typewriter and change the day.
Exactly what you did.
How about Billy Joel? Is he in the stew?
No, Billy was out here on Long Island. And when you're from New Jersey, you think you need a passport to go to Long Island. We never knew Long Island.
Really? Really?
No, no, because you'd have to come through Manhattan to go out to the island. The shadow of the city was foreboding enough. When I was on a homegrown record of a radio station out of New York City, Twisted Sister was on this homegrown talent record, a band called Zebra who got signed to Atlantic Records. But I had written Runaway, and that was like the hit song on this homegrown record. But we'd never, the two things never met. I never knew any of those people.
But musically, did you like
Billy? Sure. Absolutely. Billy Joel was huge by that point.
And kind of the Jay-Z of New York at that point, right?
He was writing all about New York. Yeah, he was New York's guy. Remember, I was much younger, but Billy was Long Island. Bruce was New Jersey. Like, Bruce was New Jersey and Bob Seger was Detroit.
Oh, you don't have to tell me, girl. I'm from fucking Detroit.
Oh, there you go.
Seger's God.
So
God.
if and when you grew up, you would have picked Bob over Bruce.
Well, my father, he felt like Billy Joel was his soulmate.
Ah, Billy.
So my whole childhood, when Billy would go to rehab, my dad would go to rehab. he thought he was the Billy Joel of Detroit. So Billy for me, holds a real, every weekend I was at his house, it was The Stranger on the fucking phonograph, pop it on.
You know what's weird for me now? Like if somebody will say, I'm a Billy guy, why can't you like Bruce too? You know, where people come up to me and go, I only like Bruce. And I go, well, what did I do? It's not exclusive. You can like Bruce and Billy and me and Bob and Tom Petty and go down the line. People get like, so I'm in this camp or that camp. You go, why?
They're tribal, right? I find it particularly weird. I'm super into cars and motorcycles. So I'll like post something about a car I love. And I go, fuck that, Chevy. It's like, no, there's about 80,000 awesome cars. No one has to pick. This isn't a tribe. Like, I like Ducatis. I also like Harleys. I just happen to emotionally connect with a Ducati. I don't know.
Yeah, amen.
Are you open about, did you just have surgery or something?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. And what was it for? Because I think you ride motorcycles, right?
Yeah, but not like you, young man.
Okay.
No. I haven't ridden any of my bikes in many years. I sort of gave it up. But not for any other reason. I just, with four kids, I stopped.
Thanks.
Not Thank even you. With, you know, I'm sorry. I hope your accident, you're recovering. You feeling all right?
Yeah, I had 16 years of sobriety and the pills got the best of me. And then I had to come out about the pills. So we're dealing with that over here. But we're coming out the other side and we're right just going to fucking start over is what we're going to do. And
that's all right. That's a good thing.
That's right. So my surgery, the surgery was fine. It was the pills that weren't so great.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Not to put that on your lap, but I'm just going to be dead honest with you.
Thank you. No, mine was, we started a food bank over this COVID. you know, we have these community restaurants, and then the need out on Long Island was for ultimately a food bank. And so we provided the food to 7 pantries over the summer. So you can imagine the scale of it. And my wife and I and a couple of people that we could let in were the ones unloading these tractor trailers and then loading these trucks to give the food to the pantries. At first, I thought I was being cute and saying, hey, this is my workout, until I realized my stomach really hurts. My stomach really hurts. My stomach really hurts. And I tore the belly button pretty bad to the point
where— Oh, so you got a hernia?
Oh, yeah, I got a legit hernia. And so I tore it pretty bad. And I can't sing right now. I can't work out. I can't do fuck all.
Isn't it fucking depressing?
It's so bad.
For me, it's the exercise. Like, I could care less about the initial pain and the surgery. It's like, I just can't not work out for a month. Mentally, I'll just unravel.
Well, I'm in day 2, and I can't sing, and I couldn't shower, and I'm like, this is not going to be fun.
You look fantastic. Yeah. No one would ever know you're 12 hours out of surgery, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert. If you dare.
We are supported by Sleep Number. Now, as more places reopen and we safely enjoy fall activities, quality sleep is more important than ever. Not only is it a natural immunity booster, it also helps with energy and recovery. Speaking of recovery, you know, I've been climbing the ladder back up to my old Sleep Number setting.
Uh-huh.
I'm up at 75 and I'm inching my way up to 85.
Oh, you're getting there.
I see the firmness as a sign of my great health.
Oh, good.
Yes. Also, my sleep score IQ has been going up steadily as well.
That's really good.
I'm above 80. Here are some tips to help your kids get better sleep. Okay, reducing exposure to bright light during the 2 hours before bed helps the brain prepare for sleep. If you eliminate stimulating activities such as video games and television during the final couple of waking hours of the day, you will see results. Also, tuning out. Have your child do his homework outside of the bedroom. 20 minutes of guided imaginary or mindfulness exercises right before getting into bed can go a long way towards reducing stress. Proven quality sleep is life-changing. Sleep. Save up to $700 on select new Sleep Number 360 smart beds with temperature balancing benefits so you both sleep just right. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com/Dax.
We are supported by Policy Genius. It's Halloween this month. We love it.
Love it.
Ooh.
And Policy Genius would like to mark the occasion by making something less scary, home and auto insurance. It can seem like a daunting task, but Policy Genius makes it easy. They combine a cutting-edge insurance marketplace with help from licensed experts to save you time and money. Home insurance is a financial protection policy that pays a lump sum if your house is damaged or destroyed by fire, weather, theft, or other disaster. Typical insurance policies for a single-family home cover your property, your personal belongings, legal protection against accidents incurred by others at your house, and costs for temporary housing during repairs. First, head to PolicyGenius.com and answer a few quick questions about yourself and your property. Then Policy Genius does the rest. They'll compare rates from over 30 top insurers from Progressive to Nationwide to find the lowest quotes. Their licensed experts will look at all the ways to maximize your savings, including bundling your home and auto policies. If Policy Genius finds a better rate than what you're currently paying, they'll get you switched for free. So if you're a homeowner, head to policygenius.com right now to get started. They've saved their home and auto insurance customers an average of $1,127 a year. Policy Genius, when it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right.
Okay, I want to talk about the Jon Bon Jovi Soul Foundation.
Yeah.
Well, let me back up. First, I read about you 130 million albums, and I go, that's bonkers. That can't even happen ever again. Good for you that you did it exactly when you did.
Yeah.
You performed for over 40 million fans in 50 countries. That's bonkers, right? But then I start reading about the Jon Bon Jovi Soul Foundation. It's like equally insane stuff. You guys, since 2006, have provided 700 units of affordable housing in 11 different states. You've built 77 homes and gave them to previously homeless veterans, right? In some partnership with Walter Reed.
Yeah.
And then 9 years ago, you opened up the Soul Kitchen in Red Bank and then a second one in Tom's River. And you've served over 100,000 meals.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what's driving you. Any one of those numbers, you could be like, I'm good. 130 million, 40 million, I'm done. It's time for me to be done. I've fed 100,000 people. I've put however many families in houses. What's in the furnace? What keeps you so engaged?
I think it's a bit of it is Catholic guilt, to be honest. You know?
There we go.
But a part of it is just because we know how, so we do. When I started the foundation, I had a partner in an arena football team many, many years ago. And I loved it, and it was fun. And I thought, with my marketing hat on, how do I ingratiate myself to the community? And I said, be more philanthropic than anybody. And so we took some money out of our pockets, my partner Craig and I, and we gave it to a bunch of charities. And then I found focus one night when I was in this hotel, and I was looking down at a man sleeping on a grate to keep warm outside of City Hall. And I said, there's the focus. It's homelessness. And I asked my best friend, Obi, to find me someone in Philadelphia who could teach me about the issue. Little did I know that the Michael Jordan of the issue is a nun by the name of Sister Mary Scullion. Everybody knows Sister Mary that's in this area. So he goes to meet Sister Mary on my behalf and says, I work for John Bon Jovi. She goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. He says, no, for real, he wants to come and talk to you.
I got to pause for 1 second. The notion that a nun knows you, that's where it's like, okay, yeah, everyone knows me. A nun knows.
A nun. She wasn't impressed, but she knew the name.
But she knew, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I went down to meet Sister Mary. And why we hit it off was, and I said, I'm not being a wise ass Sister Mary, but what would it cost to refurbish this block, not just the one row home that you're pitching me on? The point is, if we do a block, we could do a neighborhood. If we do a neighborhood, we could change some lives. So her and I hit it off some 15 years ago, and we've been close as can be ever since. And she's now on our board, and we started this foundation. And out of that, building houses with her, the economic downturn happened. And it was Dorothea who said to me, now we've got to feed the people in the houses. And she, stream of consciousness, developed this idea of a restaurant that just didn't exist anywhere. And the idea was empowering people, not a soup kitchen, so don't think like that. It's a beautiful bistro with silverware and china and a menu and gorgeous food on the menu, but there's no prices. So if you guys came and wanted to affect change directly, you leave $20. It pays for your meal. It pays for someone who's next to you. Mm-hmm. If you're in need, you volunteer. And then by bussing a table, washing a dish, working in the garden, you've earned your meal. So uh-huh. Now you feel good about what
yeah,
you're
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, you have purpose and a sense
and
of industry.
We take no government money, so there's nothing institutional about it. There's no plastic trays and processed food and soda pop or booze. You know, we're coming there to feed a family and hopefully volunteer and then move you on. So that was the first one. The second one, after Superstorm Sandy hits New Jersey, and we know that much more, under our roof, we take a food pantry, a food bank, a service provider, a culinary program, and then we're the flagship tenant, if you will. And then all of that's under one roof because we realize that those people in need of those services, it's not like they can jump in the Range Rover and drive out to the service provider, come back, go to the food pantry. So they're all under one roof that we were able to provide. Then we realized that there were kids on college campuses with food insecurity. So Rutgers University, we opened our third one, and we're feeding college kids, and Rutgers at Newark embraced the concept, God bless them, but then COVID hit. So now they closed their doors, and we'll eventually reopen, but right now kids can't go to the restaurant on the college campus. Then COVID really cripples the country, but out on Eastern Long Island, where we often spend our summers, we knew that the need was dire. And so that's when we opened our first food bank. And there was a wonderful family, the Rubenstein family, who owned this family entertainment complex, but they can't use it. You know, they can't let people go bowling and play mini golf. So they give us the place. And so I provide all the food. We pay for everything. We bring it all in from New Jersey, so nobody thinks we're taking anything from anyone in Long Island. And we are able to provide for 5 months now the food to the food pantries, who then get it to the 25,000 people that we've fed. And so it's been wonderful, you know, and I got a souvenir out of the deal. And now we're back in the city, putting our kid back in school.
The souvenir being the hernia?
A nice hernia operation.
Well, look, there's a more shameful way to get an injury, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a dude in my meeting the other day who came in limping, and he is 58. And he goes, I can't believe I'm going to tell you guys this, but this is a sex injury.
Oh,
just,
wow.
Just having normal old sex, I blew out my ankle. And I'm like, that's the best age-related story I've ever heard in my life. Like, that's good where it'll hit. Yeah. Can't even have sex without getting injured. That's demoralizing.
Yeah.
Now, having done that work, I think anyone that endeavors to what you've done and have accomplished, it's real easy for the identity to really get anchored in that. And having your identity anchored in this other area, I'm sure being a father's got to be the number one. And then, you know, having affected this change, that's just a whole different sliver of an identity, isn't it? And one that kind of feels like it has substance.
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly didn't add to anything under the header of cliche, cool. Oh, go start a food bank in a bunch of restaurants and, you know, and do that. In fact, it was foreign to anyone that we'd bring it up to. But that makes us, my wife and I, uniquely us, is that we do this. And and I like that. And to be defined just by being in a rock band would be awful to me. And I think I even thought that way when I was young. It's what I do. It's not who I am.
Right.
There's always been so much more for me. Although there are days when I think about, am I lying to myself or not? Because you got to, you know, you say, all right, it's over. Walk away. Okay. What am I going to do? This is what I do. So even like not being able to tour this year, canceling the tour outright, postponing a record, I couldn't not write songs. I think I could honestly tell you that I could not perform again. I really could tell you. I'd be okay with that. It's not my burning desire. But to make a record and to be excited about writing a song that comes to fruition on a record, then you want to share it in that order, that I think I'd want to continue to do. But the identity that comes with that, you know, I'm sort of in the middle. Like, it's good because I get to talk to you and I get to go on TV shows and, you know, and all the kind of fun stuff that comes with being me. And the downside is I don't really look forward to go back to that hotel room ever again.
Yeah. Well, and I'd imagine the other cycle you get stuck in, I certainly did in movies, which is like, I go away on a location, I'm gone for 3 months, it's my own little bubble. I love that little bubble. And then I miss home, but then I'm home and I'm like, I gotta get myself back in that bubble again. It's like, I'm almost never happy either place. And so I'm like happy in both places and also unhappy in both places.
Sure, sure, sure. That's natural. That's everybody. That's everybody. It's not like I want to give it up just because, oh, I can't bear being away from home. No, I could bear being away from home. As soon as I was, you know, there in the bubble, I would relent and I'd be, okay, I'm cool. I'm happy to be here. Between now and getting into that bubble, I'd be bitching and moaning all the time. But nowadays, because it was taken away from all of us at the same time, I don't know. In a year from now, I'm going to think one of two different ways. I can't wait to play again, or I might be done forever.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, don't you think you and I were brainwashed in that you bust your ass, you save your money, and then you retire, and it's this blueprint that's in my mind. And then so often I think, oh, retire from this terrible job of saying sentences in front of a camera? Like, what? What are you acting like? You know, I'm not in a factory in Detroit. And then peers of mine in the industry, we talk about retiring. And I just think it's like this blueprint that got installed that sometimes I think maybe I should challenge, maybe I should embrace. I'm not sure.
I think everyone feels the same way. At least I do. Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that because I don't know which way. I honest to God don't know which way. It's like, am I going to be great doing it because it's what I need in my bones, the way I needed it in my bones? I don't know right now.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. It is fair. It's just an interesting time in my life that I'm going, I don't know what I'd do in retirement. I don't want to retire in order to fill in the blank. That's not the motivation at all. And it's not because we're not still selling out everywhere. Because I always said when I'm on the Where Are They Now tour, I'm out.
Right.
So that's not it either.
I would love to see you prance out on Dancing with the Stars. She's a little rock And you'd be spinning you someone. You'd have sequins and shit. I want to see it.
The Masked Singer and all the rest of it. Yeah. No, you know, I'm out. It's okay.
Okay, let's talk about your new album. Your new album is called 2020.
Yeah.
And you've described it as being about life, love, loss, and everything in between. So the whole gamut. But you added two songs late into it. And I wonder just how you make that decision. If you like, oh, do we have time to do this? Just how does that come about?
It's a very topical record. When I first come up with the title and we were recording Now What I Could Look Back and Say were the first batch of songs for the record, I came out of the bathroom in Nashville and I said to the guys, I got the title, 2020. I said, if nothing else, it's a tongue-in-cheek political campaign. And who knows what's going to happen a year from now with politics. And so this is a great t-shirt. That was it. But then I started to write topical songs because of everything that was going on around us. And I turned in that record. And it had a good amount of substance that was, in fact, topical. But if you're going to claim to write that topical record and be a witness to history, and then history happens right under our feet with COVID, and then the death of George Floyd, you have to open up the can again and get under the hood. And so I did. And I fine-tuned several of the existing songs to make them even more clear. And I sat down and wrote Do What You Can about the whole COVID thing. And then I wrote American Reckoning, and I really went out on a limb because of white privilege and, you know, who am I to be talking about this kind of stuff? And then resubmit the record. And I'm very, very proud of it.
I'm happy for you, genuinely. And I have to imagine for you, you want to give people a song that they get married to. You want to give people an experience at a concert where they hit a 10 naturally. I have to imagine most of your career, you've been like, why would I alienate half the people? Certainly it wasn't as bad back then as it is now, but was that ever part of your analysis? Like, I've got a different thing I want to spread and I want to keep it as open to as many people as possible.
Well, that would be an obvious answer, especially when I was a younger guy. When you had single-minded focus, which was simply to make records and entertain people. Mm-hmm. You know, I would often bring up an example. So Bono is probably right at my age. He's a couple of months older, I think. His upbringing was obviously very different than mine. I never had the orange men walking through my neighborhood and saying, you know, get the Catholic kid and beat him up. You know, I didn't have any of that kind of turmoil in suburban New Jersey when you had a wonderful middle-class upbringing with two hardworking parents. So, of course, you're writing the happy anthemic song. Although Runaway really, if you think about it, had a social consciousness to it, talking about the girl who was on the street corner while I was lucky enough to get off the bus and walk 10 blocks to the recording studio I was the gopher in. I was aware of the world around me, but I chose not to get involved. And I don't blame myself. I was 21 years old, and that's all I had to live for.
Yeah. Also very defendable. Like, here's my point on politics. I have very strong political opinions, but there are many people that are outspoken, right? So if I don't do this thing I would like to do, it's okay. Bill Maher's doing it. So there's part of me that's like, everyone's got a little bubble they're going to specialize in. You don't have to be in every bubble. And I think that's a little bit defendable, which is people need a reprieve. And so they deserve a reprieve, you know?
There's going to be some trouble for me on this record.
Right,
because
right.
I have evolved. You know, I'm not sitting here dyeing my hair blonde and, you know, and pretending to be 25. Yeah. I'm 58 years old and I'm, you know what I stand for. But now where the record is defensible is that if you really listen closely to every song, it doesn't take sides.
Yeah.
I am but a witness to history. I don't take sides. I know what my opinions are and so do you, but I don't take sides. There's a song on this record called Lower the Flag. And I was just appalled that two shootings happened on a Saturday night and a Sunday morning. So when I woke up to the second one, I couldn't believe that the reporter was saying, and we'll be right back with the weather and sports. And you're thinking, wow, are we that numb? So I had to sit down and write that song. But never once do I say, guns are bad, bullets are bad, because people really believe in their Second Amendment rights, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. So all I ask in the song is, if this happened to a family member, how would you feel?
Yeah.
And I wrote the song. Yeah. So, you know, I'm just trying to have a conversation about how would you feel?
You're asking for empathy. Like, go ahead and take five minutes and just think. Here was my discovery of white privilege. I fucking hated that term the first time I heard it because all I heard was that what I got was handed to me. And I immediately started building on my defense. But the fuck it was, I moved to California with nothing. I did this. I did this. You know, no one knocked on my door and said, here you go. So that I was defensive. And then slowly it occurred to me, I walked around LA with drugs on me for 12 years. I got pulled over many times drunk with drugs on me. If I'm black, A, I would have been pulled over about 100 times more. And then I would have been prosecuted and that jury would have found me guilty and that judge would have given me a different sentence. And so for the first time was like, I would have been in prison. I'm not here. I'm black. I had the same life, did the same thing. I'm in prison. That's almost inarguable. So that was my breakthrough of like, oh yeah, I've had many struggles, but the color of my skin has not been one of those struggles.
Correct. And hopefully millions of us learned that story too. And I certainly made sure that I learned it. And that is true. You and I are very lucky. And now I realize even more so why.
I have to imagine, too, that you have the same desire that I do, which is I most want more than anything is that people could start chatting again, that the sides weren't opposite. That to me is more heartbreaking. Most of the single issues I care about.
Sure.
There's a couple that are above that. But for me, I'm really discouraged. And even while you're describing your charity, which could only be taken as something wonderfully positive, I was thinking, God, in this day and age, someone thinks that's political, just helping people, that would be a political statement. Does that occur to you? And isn't that not annoying that wearing a mask is a political decision?
Well, isn't that something? It's become politicized. Taking a knee, if you remember, Colin Kaepernick took it out of racial injustice and police brutality. It had nothing to do with the flag. The NFL lost the narrative and never got it back. And now, 3 years later, now they said, I'm sorry, you're right. But I remember the day that they lost the narrative, and I remember the day that they decided not to get it back. And it turned into something that was really a problem, and it ruined a man's livelihood, and it alienated fans, and you know, it's the game that I love and the business that I loved. And I remember how it happened. So it's a bitch that people aren't talking. Maybe the greatest thing that can come out of these last 4 years is that we realize it's time to start talking. Or, God forbid, Dax, if I'm talking to you in December and it's not the United States that we recognize anymore, that decision will have been made by the electorate and the American dream lasted for a nice run.
It had a real nice run. Don't, whatever you do, do not want. What's the name of that documentary we just watched on Netflix?
Social Dilemma?
Social Dilemma. Have you watched this yet?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh.
You're going to walk into the room and just think for about an hour afterwards. Yeah. Yeah, we are powerless over an algorithm that's much smarter than we are. And its singular goal is to put us in tribes.
Well, you know, here comes the North and South again. Here comes, you know, it's crazy cray. It's crazy cray. And count on it happening. The question is to what degree?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, regardless of the outcome, there's going to be some civil unrest. The question is does civil unrest turn into civil war? Does it turn into red versus blue, me versus you? I don't know. And I pray not.
Yeah, me too. Well, I am glad that you are in a position now that you can do whatever you want. I think of all the things people would maybe daydream about your life, the things that would be satisfying are probably a little underwhelming when you're actually living them. And I would imagine having the freedom for you to lead with your ethics is awesome.
It's a gift that we all have. And so it's up to each and every individual to make that worth gold, you know, to make that ethics and that moral compass worth gold. And we can. And I'm not opposed to the opposite sides. I'm really honest to God, open to listening. But don't lead with hate. You know, just lead with some compassion. And I'm more than willing to sit down and talk about it.
And how about some just humility? That could be a singular goal both sides have, which is like, yeah, we all got opinions. We're all certain they're dead right. We're all, you know, we're all geniuses. But maybe just a bit of humility. And some open ears.
All right. Yeah.
Well, John Bon Jovi, you fucking rule. I hope you say hi to my wife when you see her at Howard's house.
Thanks, you guys.
Where can people go to help support your foundation?
The jbjsoulfoundation.org.
jbjsoulfoundation.org. So go there. Also, check out 2020. We watched the video today for Do What You Can, which was really cool. It's like Vanilla Sky to see New York like that. I guess cool is not the right word, but very weird experience. Watch you walk through New York like that is pretty wild.
Yeah. But thank you. Yeah, the video came out good. The record's great. October 2nd.
All right, man. Awesome. Great talking with you.
Thank you, brother.
If you get inducted to something else, I'll come. I don't care where the fuck it's at. I'll fly. I ain't scared.
Thanks, bud. Thanks, Max.
All right. Nice meeting you.
And you. Thanks, buddy.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
We are supported by the coolest, most gangster minivan in the biz, Chrysler Pacifica. Oh, mine is super dope looking. It's black on black on black, 20-inch wheels. It's the S package. It's the sexiest minivan in Los Angeles. This minivan has best-in-class storage capacity and more than SUVs and crossovers. Pacifica is the only minivan in its class with stow-and-go seating and storage system.
Remember the other day we were in it and I was going to ride and I was like, oh, I'll just take my car because the seat's not up. And you were like, no, look how fast this is. And it was 2 seconds and that seat was up.
Also, you were facing the Uconnect theater system with dual 10-inch HD touch screens and built-in games and apps. Pacifica is America's first and only hybrid. It's also a 2019 IIHS top safety pick. Chrysler is offering Armcherries an exclusive $1,000 bonus cash offer towards a new Chrysler Pacifica or Pacifica hybrid. Visit PacificaandDax.com and sign up to receive this offer, updates, and more from Chrysler brand. And now with Pacific family pricing, your family is their family. Customers can receive Chrysler's employee price plus the incremental $1,000 for being an Armcherry. So guys, get over to PacificaandDax.com. We are supported by Square. You know Square.
I know Square.
Little white card reader.
That's right.
We use it ourselves. But, you know, they have a lot of solutions to run a business. Kismet, okay?
We love Kismet.
Kismet is a Mediterranean restaurant in Los Feliz. Since quarantine, they've adapted and opened up Kismet Goods, which stocks wine, farmers market produce, and groceries. They offer contactless shopping with online ordering and pickup same day. They have Kismet To Go, offering their same delicious dinner options and custom cakes by Meadow. Amazing cakes that are market-inspired and vary with the season. So, if you run a business, Square has tools to help you right now, like easy ways to take contactless payments in person and simple ways to get paid online. No matter where you sell, Square makes it easy to keep your cash flow moving. You can get instant access to your money with Square Card, a free business debit card. There are no bank transfers needed. You can use your money right away. If you want to transfer your money to your bank account, you can do that too, and on a transfer schedule that works for you. All these tools work together, all from one place. You just need a Square account to get started. See everything Square can do at square.com/go/Dax. That's square.com/go/Dax. And now my favorite part of the show, the fact check with my soulmate, Monica Padman. Will you introduce everyone to who's here?
Oh, we're started.
Oh,
we're ABR. Oh my gosh, we're ABR. Okay, so this is the most special fact check we've ever done because we have a very special guest.
My son is here. The prodigal son has returned.
Best friend Aaron Weekly is here on the couch.
I can't get enough of that California sun.
I can't stay away from that sun, man.
He's here. And we thought it'd be really fun for the Armcherries to get a peek behind the curtain.
Although you have complained in the past, rightly so, that sometimes our jokes end up getting very exclusionary.
Okay, let me be clear.
Be clear.
I've never complained. You've asked. Is it sometimes hard when we're doing like our thing and I say yes?
Yeah.
But I've never outwardly complained because I love it. It's such a special connection. I would never be like, I don't like that you guys
take these dumb trips.
Mental trips.
Yes. So the current one, there's two current ones that have developed just since he arrived on Saturday, which is we're watching Long Way Round and Long Way Up, the Ewan McGregor motorcycle documentary that we're obsessed with. And we want to do the same thing, but
of
we can't do the same thing because we'll be posers. So we're going to do a show called All Terrain where we probably drive a sweet convertible across California. Then we get to the desert and we drive razors through the desert. And then we get to the Rocky Mountains and we get on snowmobiles and drive like 300 miles on snowmobiles. Anyways, then we're in Fanboat in the Everglades and we're going to cross every kind of terrain and every kind of vehicle. And we decided the show would not be complete if we don't fly a jet at the end of it.
God. And we thought you might get a little upset.
Yeah, I'm not going to sign off on that.
But we also thought if we kept the jet at 40 miles per hour.
Yes, this is our hack, is that we know we could survive a 40 mile an hour plane crash.
Geez.
So it's either that or the other plan is we just take off. We think we could take off in a jet without any instruction.
What if it blows up like the Space Shuttle Challenger?
Well, good news. Our plan is to eject as soon as we're airborne. We're going to pull the eject button and the canopy will blow up and then we'll get shot into the air and then we'll parachute down. So we will have flown a jet, but we know we can't land one.
No.
Seems like an enormous waste of resources.
Get it to 40. Cruise. Maybe, our initial thought was get it up for liftoff, which we don't know if we can do at 40. Get up in the air and we'd be in a jet, so we'd be hauling ass. And then we just immediately eject. Because it'd be so frightening.
I will be giving each other thumbs up in the air as we're floating down in our respective parachutes.
And this is what you guys have done your whole lives.
Yes.
Sit around and come up with plans.
Stupid things.
Yeah, plans.
The other one is Aaron. I was suggesting Aaron should get a CPAP machine, and we've been laughing so hard for 4 days about their gasoline powered. And that you put them in your bedroom and then you run out of gas in the middle. Again, this isn't funny to anyone, but
I know, but that's what's cute.
Yeah. And then even Gaga got mad at us.
Kristen's mom's
in town. And I went into the kitchen and she goes, "Are you all done giggling?" And I go, "No, there's going to be another 2 weeks of it just to get everyone's expectations right." But we had the funnest day on Sunday. We went to the beach.
It was lovely. I forgot that there is a beach out here.
So did I.
I know. We never go to the beach. That's one true thing about many Los Angelinos. Most people don't go to the beach.
Yeah, but we got in the ocean and we were in there for like 45 minutes the first time and then a full hour plus the second time once Charlie and Matt and Ryan arrived and they were surfing and we can't do that. So we were just singing really loud and screaming, "Tidal wave!"
Oh. Yeah, there's nothing better. I got a little bummed out when Dax said we're going to the beach this afternoon.
Yes!
I immediately thought, okay, I'll do whatever I gotta do. But the socks. And, because I picture being super hot.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Traffic parking.
Exactly. The ocean, the water sucks. I love lakes, but I've always hated the ocean.
We're lake men.
Yeah.
Well, your lakes are also deceiving. Your lakes are oceans.
Mm-hmm. True.
They're the best
fresh
kind.
Coast is the best coast.
Wow.
Yeah. I've never been more wrong, though. Parking was easy. We had umbrellas to stay in the shade.
I will say I packed all my stuff to go to the beach. I put my water bottle in. Mm. I had a bottle of wine.
Oh.
I had a towel, my hat. I walked all the way to the car and I said, nope.
Yeah.
Nope. I am not going to drive 45 minutes to the beach today. I'm going to go inside and make a soup.
I just want to tell one quick plan that I think will also help summarize Aaron and I, which is I'm going to go home with him.
Next week.
Yeah, next week. I'm going to go home with him for a week. With the sole goal of going to the cider mill, because Aaron and I never miss a trip to the cider mill around Halloween.
Jealous.
But Aaron and I are both very allergic to bees. So what happens is we drive, it's always an hour and 20 minutes to get from Detroit to Deal's Cider Mill. We get there and we're in search of hot cinnamon donuts. In 99 times out of 100, they're not hot.
Nope. That thing's been turned off for days.
Oh, no.
And so we get our cinnamon donuts and we bag them to microwave them, which ruins them. And then we get our big jug of apple cider, which just gives both of us diarrhea within 20 minutes. And then we sit outside of Deals for tops 5 minutes because we're both allergic to bees and the bees swarm us. And then one of us goes, let's get the fuck out of here. We've never been there for longer than 5 minutes, but we go every year and I'm flying home specifically just to go there for 5 minutes. And we were thinking maybe this year we would just fly by and flip the place off.
Yeah, there's something very enjoyable about how unenjoyable it is.
Yes, yes, that's absolutely right.
Interesting. I don't have anything like that.
You don't?
Like, we were all on vacation a couple months ago in Sedona.
Oh, in Sedona, yeah.
And we got to this one water hole, I guess is what you call it. Swim hole. Yeah. And we get there and everyone's like trying to get to the spot and we're walking through and everyone's falling down because the rocks are covered in moss and
cutting
so
their
slippery
legs.
And it hurts. And I have my Jordans, so I'm trying to not get those wet. And I was like, this is not fun. This is not fun. Like struggling is not fun.
I really enjoy it.
I know.
You left out the part
too. All the boys loved it.
Yeah, everyone was miserable and it was so wonderful.
But half of the people enjoyed it and half the people didn't. And I think it's like how much of an adventurer are you?
Yeah.
And I'm zero.
A pattern of Aaron and I's is we love to go do things without any preparation. So we've taken many road trips and we don't have anything when we get there. And we've just slept in the grass many places.
That's nice.
And again, I don't know why I like that, but I like it more than I like planning and packing.
Me too. Yeah. I think there's something about us doing a show with no preparation that would be fantastic. Although I don't think anybody would allow us to do a show.
We got to hire people to prepare and we'll just arrive.
Yeah, that's better.
We only have one rule, is that we will not receive instruction on how to operate anything.
Yeah, especially the jet.
Most specifically the jet. But you know, one time Aaron got a motorcycle when we were 18 or 19, I guess. Not an ideal road trip motorcycle, kind of a small motorcycle.
Okay,
we're both very large. And we decided, let's drive this motorcycle to Austin, Texas from Detroit. And so we put 2 milk crates on the back of it. That was our entire stuff we brought. And half of it was cigarettes. And we started driving and it was...
I think the milk crates were specifically for when we left, got out of the Michigan border, we could throw our helmets in there.
That's true.
There was no helmet laws.
You're right. Oh. Yeah. You're right. That's why they were put on the machine. But we're definitely over 440 combined pounds at that point on this little motorcycle. And we just start riding and it's miserable right out of the gates. It's so miserable, but we don't want to let one another down. And this is the only time in my life where it was actually more miserable to be driving it than being passenger. So we both actually wanted to be passenger because the driver would block some of the wind. Our rule was you had to drive out a tank of gas, which was about 100 miles. And it was intolerable. And we got all the way to St. Louis. And I don't know who said it first, but one of us was like, I can't do it.
Yeah, it was very emotionally.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were crying. Aaron said he was crying.
I was crying while I was the passenger. Well, no, driver and passenger. Yeah. I spent most of the trip crying.
So we turned the motorbike around, and then as soon as we both knew we weren't having to go all the way to Texas, we got in a pretty good mood.
Oh, good.
And then we were like, let's get off the highway. And so we started taking all these country roads through Indiana, and then it got kind of nice. And then we found someone to buy us a case of beer at like a party store. Yeah. And then we just found a green field, and we pulled the motorcycle into the field and we just laid down and started drinking beer. We had, again, no bedding or anything.
You slept there?
And this is the honest to God truth. We're sitting there drinking some beer and then all of a sudden there's an enormous, ding, 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 Bader Meinhof. There's an enormous ball of fire about a half mile away from us coming out of a jet engine.
No!
Yes.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding.
And we realized we set up camp about a half mile from a drag race track.
Oh, wow.
And there was a guy in a jet dragster fucking putting the afterburners on and stuff. And then we were like, oh, my. We were so excited. We had the best seat in the house.
Wow.
And then we just went to sleep in the wet grass and we woke up super wet and we just didn't care.
Oh, my God.
It was a really good trip.
Aaron cries 75% of the time, but it was a good trip. I'm happy that your parents let you guys do these adventures.
Yeah, my mom loves Aaron, if not the same amount as me, maybe even a little bit more. I told you, she used to come in and we would be snuggling.
Yeah.
And for many years, she thought we were gay.
In a relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Physical relationship.
She didn't care, was like, yeah, okay, they're dating, I guess, yeah. In junior high. But we just both wanted dads.
You wanted snuggles.
We wanted some male affection, and we gave it to each other.
Really sweet. You guys are still very affectionate with each other. I like it.
We kissed last night on our AA meeting.
Oh,
yeah, we were doing our Zoom meeting, and
people get turned on.
Yeah,
yeah, I bet.
Aaron just shared a really sweet thing, and I just wanted to give him a kiss afterwards.
That's nice. What is your first memory of each other?
Oh, we both know it.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth grade
bathroom at Muir Junior High.
Uh-huh.
Dax was a new kid to our school halfway through the year, and somehow I had lost my way between fifth and sixth grade.
Sure.
I was kind of cool in fifth grade, and sixth grade, new school, new kids.
Yeah.
And I was scared. And, and I hated my life. And, Dax came in to the bathroom, and I had seen him because he was fucking cool looking. You know?
Oh my God, that's everyone's first impression of you.
Like, oh, how cool he was.
Even in sixth grade.
He had such a cool haircut. And,
oh, man.
But he came in and he said, "Are you Aaron Weekly?" And I was like, fuck.
Oh no, you thought he was gonna fight you or something?
Of course.
Oh.
That's it. That's all anyone did in our school.
Yeah, that's my only thought anyone wanted to do.
Oh no.
Yeah. So
Why didn't you say, "Are you my best friend, Aaron Weekly?"
Well, the whole reason I was searching for Aaron Weekly is that I had spent half of sixth grade at another junior high, and my best friend there was Kevin Gwen. And so when Kevin knew I was moving to Milford, he said, "Find Aaron Weekly." That was my best friend in fifth grade. So I was very excited to meet Aaron. But again, he wasn't as exactly as Kevin had described.
As advertised. So were you like, "Are you Aaron Weekly? Are you Aaron Weekly?
You can't be Aaron Weekly, are you?"
Yeah, sitting there with a load of poop in my pants.
So there was really no connection. I just said, "Are you Aaron Weekly?" And he said, "Yes." And then I thought things were going to take off from there. And then they just didn't.
Oh, they didn't?
No. And then sixth grade ended. And then first day of seventh grade, we happened to be sitting next to each other in Mr. Nelson's social studies class. And then really quickly, we started drawing the ball sack cowboy people.
Really? That or young?
That's where it started.
Oh.
So we spent most of that class drawing these ball sack cowboys to each other.
Yeah.
And laughing a lot. Yeah. And Mr. Nelson liked us, thank God. So he had some soft spot for us.
I think he giggled a few times.
Yes. He was a confident man. Yes. He wasn't like threatened by it.
If he was threatened by your friend.
But then Aaron really came out of his shell, and he became the coolest guy in school, and everyone wanted to be like him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It was a real 180.
Topsy-turvy.
It was like one of those movies where the girl is ugly because she has glasses on and a ponytail holder, and then all of a sudden Aaron took his glasses off and let his hair down, and Aaron was like, "What the fuck? Coolest dude in school's been here the whole time, hiding in plain sight."
But do you think you had the confidence because now you had a best friend?
Sure. Before I came out of the shell, I was Remember I had a girlfriend named Bob?
Yeah,
his like, girlfriend I mean, named I was Bob. Dating a girl named Bob.
Oh, my God. In defense of her, her name was Roberta, but she went by Bobby, but we called her Bob.
Sure. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. And tell Monica about the first time I ever came over to your house to play. You're like, come over and let's play hockey. Bring your ice skates.
Oh, God.
We go out. We put our skates on.
Yeah. And someone immediately wants to fight.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They want to fight you or you
want to
fight?
No, I want nothing to do with it. This kid, Josh, who I don't know because I've never been to his neighborhood.
I had fought him a few times already. You know, it was just something you had to do. You know, oh, God.
I didn't want to fight him, and I said to Aaron, I don't know if I want to fight this guy. And Aaron goes, I fought him a few times. You can totally win.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And then the deal I brokered, I don't know if you remember this. I go, I'll fight you, but we got to take our skates off because I don't want to get my throat slashed or something.
Yeah, that was smart. I'm glad you did that.
But again, I wish I could see a video of this because everyone pauses. Everyone's excited to see a fight. And I'm just my first time in the neighborhood. And then everyone pauses while we take our hockey skates off, which takes a long time. And then we don't have shoes with us.
Barefoot fight?
Yeah. Anyways, the fight lasted.
Or socks?
7 seconds. Within 7 seconds, I had him pinned down and I was on top of him. Even though he picked the fight with me and he was calling me all every name you can imagine. And that was our first time hanging out.
Wow. You guys.
You little boys. All we really wanted to do was snuggle.
I know, that dichotomy here. Yeah. Snuggling and then having to fight because it's just what you do.
Yeah.
There's no way I could have been a guest in his neighborhood and then not.
No.
But there was a way.
You couldn't have done it.
I don't think there was.
No. Many years later, Josh, who was our age, but already at that point, we were in seventh grade and he was in fifth. He had already flunked twice.
Okay.
He's an unhappy guy. I guess now I have compassion for him.
Yeah. Clearly things aren't going great for Josh. Okay.
So we go away to high school, right?
Yeah.
My sister rides the bus. The elementary and the junior high rode the same bus. So Josh is now in eighth grade, and my sister is like a fourth grader, a third grader.
Uh-huh.
And Josh calls her a cunt on the bus.
Carly?
Yes. Says, you're a effing cunt. And
to a fourth grade?
Oh, he was a great guy.
Oh.
So my sister comes home and she is crying and she tells me this. And Aaron is there and we're 15 and we just get in my mom's car and we drive straight to Josh's house. We fly up in the driveway, don't have a license. We bang on his door and I don't know who came to the door, his sister or somebody. And we're like, where's Josh? And she's like, he's not here. He hasn't been here in a while. Like, okay. So that mission's over.
God.
And then I got my license like 2 months later. And it was roughly on my birthday. It was like the first week I had my license. And I'm driving my little sister to her like cheerleading practice or something. And by God, Josh is walking down the road. So I pull the car over.
Oh, no.
I get out of the car. I walk straight up to him. I punch him right in the face.
Oh.
He falls on the ground and he goes, why did you do that? And in that moment, I think I've punched the wrong person. I haven't seen him in 3 years. And I get totally panicked that I've just hit a stranger. And I go, you're Josh, right? And he goes, yeah. And I go, don't ever talk to my sister again. And then I walked and got in the car. Carly was very happy.
Oh, yeah. Great.
We grew up on different planets.
I think so. Poor
Going
Josh.
Back, yeah, I feel bad for Josh.
There's no way he was happy during
I'm
all
also,
that.
Also, like, I hate the part where he was mean to Carly and wanted to fight everyone, but I also am imagining a person walking down the street totally unaware, and someone just comes up and punches them in the face. Like,
well, if you're 16 and
like
you
that.
If you're 16 and you tell a 10-year-old she's a cunt, I'm sorry, but in my world, you deserve to get blasted, probably.
And you don't deserve to know what's coming.
Yes. No, but I've said this on here a bunch of times. I met Aaron and I thought, whatever I am, it's right because this person's also that person, and I don't really care if everyone else isn't that.
Yeah.
I know he is.
Exactly.
And I now want to be this person I know I am.
Yeah.
And I really don't think that would have happened to me if I didn't meet Aaron.
I don't think so either. We owe Aaron a thanks for this podcast.
Yes, we do.
We wouldn't have met. Nothing would have happened.
Yeah, but I feel the exact same way. Although we already kind of talked about it. Dex got me out of my shell.
Yeah.
But it was also, I felt like it was a life-saving moment in that I didn't give a fuck who thought what about him and I, that there was like a, dare I say, love at first sight.
Yeah. You should dare. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You don't get very many of those in life.
You sure don't.
No.
If some people I don't know ever get it. So it's very special.
Yeah. And we've also dipped in and out of each other's lives at different times.
I think that's an important thing for people to hear, because maybe just because they've lost touch with someone important doesn't mean they won't find them again.
The saddest thing in the world, we used to get drunk and read it and cry, is we'd always save a full page in our yearbook for one another.
Yes.
And so the seventh grade entry at the end of the year is like, we love each other so much. And then by the end of eighth grade, Aaron's getting a little more daring than I am as far as being a bad boy. And so we're starting to like grow apart a little bit. And we know I'm going to move to another high school.
Right.
So the eighth grade page is so sad. It's really just like sad. Hags. Well, it's like we know we're kind of being honest about it.
Yeah, I remember I couldn't think of some of the sentences Dex wrote, and it was like, I love you so much. Please know that a 15-minute high isn't worth a $1 million a year baseball contract.
I'm thinking of you as a little eighth grader writing that.
Already worried about his professional career.
Now I have a son in eighth grade.
Yeah.
Like, he has friends, but I think that doesn't happen too often. Where two boys express their feelings as much as we did.
I hope we're living in a time now where that's getting more acceptable.
Yeah.
And that boys can be more openly affectionate in each other's yearbooks and stuff.
It's really interesting when I hear that. I was well-intentioned, but also it's already one of my character defects coming out, which is like, I'm basically telling him how he should be, and he's already feeling bad that he's doing things, and I'm now amplifying that, and I'm kind of taking this position of I know what's best
the
for
high
him.
Ground.
Yeah.
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 I really never starts thought early. Of it like that, but yeah.
Yeah. When you're feeling bad and in scared, and you're making bad decisions. You're probably making bad decisions because you don't believe in yourself.
Of course.
So the way probably to help isn't be like, you're going to lose everything. I don't know.
15-minute high.
I did not ever read those sentences and read it with that tone.
Oh, good.
No, it was. I only read it as you were worried about
me. I was worried about you. Yes. I loved you. And then 9th and 10th grade, we kind of grew apart. And then Aaron ended up getting sober. I feel like that's how we started hanging again. And then so we would go to these meetings together. And then we got back in love. And we were sober together all of 12th grade. And we took all these crazy road trips. And we lived in the car. And then we graduated high school together. And then we lived in the car for like 6 months and drove around the country. And then I moved here. And that was a hurdle. But also, it wasn't too big of a hurdle. Every time I went home, I spent every single day with Aaron. I'd spend the whole summer there. And then I got sober at 29.
Yep.
And Aaron didn't.
Quite the opposite.
Pedal to the metal.
So that caused a little bit of some friction.
Yeah, well, just, I will say in Aaron's defense, whenever I came home, he like pretty got his shit together, and he'll meet me at every restaurant. We get to hang out and everything. But it's just clear where I'm way different trajectories.
Yeah.
And I'm also like super want him to be sober with me. And I also don't want to be luxury. But anyways, now Aaron's sober and I'm sober.
Yay.
Like the greatest thing ever.
I didn't know if we were allowed to say that.
Well, we didn't ask.
We are very much allowed. Okay, I'm great. Very proud to be sober now.
Almost 11 months.
In our last episode with Allie Raceman, you said, I always use the attraction approach and I don't ever like tell someone they need to get sober. I've only done it once. And then I cut where you said I did it for my childhood best friend because I knew everyone knew it would be Aaron.
True.
And I didn't know if we were allowed to say that. So I cut that. But yes, yeah, so you helped Aaron.
I called him and said, I think it's time probably to go to treatment and anything I can do to help, I'll do. And to my great delight and shock, he said, I think so too, which I did not think was
ever
going to happen.
It worked out that way.
And
that
look
it
where was you time. Both are. And then Aaron went a couple weeks ago when Dax told you, were you like, oh my God, we just can't get on the same page.
Oh,
it's kind of how I felt.
Well, like, of course, my first thought was worried.
Yes.
And then right away, I mean, Jesus, we are so human. And I don't, I mean, understanding how our brains work, being addicts. Yeah, it wasn't like the most surprising thing in the world.
Right.
As I think I shared, one of my many reasons I gave myself to not be honest about it was like, I can't do this now. I'm like, Aaron's finally back in my life and Aaron's finally on this road. And now if I collapse, is that going to impact him?
Yeah.
But what's so awesome is all that happened was like, it just flipped. So Aaron was like, all right, I'll come see you. I'll come be with you for 2 weeks. So now he's the elder.
Yes.
And then I'm going to ask him to sponsor me. Well, I think we should jam back on to just talk about the tour we're all going to take.
Okay, yeah.
On Big Brown.
Yeah,
we'll just
absolutely.
Put an earmark in that. But just know that we are all going on tour.
Yes.
There's no performance. Just we'll be on tour and we're going to wear Waylon Jennings shirts every day.
Yep.
And we're going to have merch, but it's not for anything.
No. And we're going to set up shop in like many come and goes across the country, just all gas stations.
Yep.
And we'll make sure we announce every time we're going to be somewhere on tour, but don't expect a show or anything because we can't play
instruments. We'll just be selling t-shirts.
Yeah, possibly. Well, you can watch me sleep in my CPAP.
Oh, that would be that's worth paying for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was so lovely. I'm so glad you joined us.
Oh, I'm so happy to pop these headphones on and be here.
Yeah.
I had been so nervous if you would ever ask me to sit down with you in recent years, but God damn it.
He did it.
Love it.
So what are the facts?
Oh, yeah. Shoot. I forgot. Okay, well, we have three facts, and I'll just blow through them.
Okay. Sorry, Jon Jovi.
Sorry.
He was awesome, by the way. Exactly. Let's just say that.
And what I didn't really get to tell him, I mean, it wasn't that I didn't get to. I felt like I shouldn't tell him that he was definitely one of my top three boys.
Any posters?
Oh, tons of posters. Even in the Monica and Jess Love Boys picture that we took, artwork that we took, I used my real old cutouts.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few of them are Bon Jovi.
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh, I loved him. And my childhood best friend, Gina, were obsessed with him. She introduced him to me and we would go to his concerts and we were just like these two little girls at a Bon Jovi concert.
What kind of feelings did you have there?
Sexual.
Sexual.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. He was and still is so hot.
Yeah. He's a sex machine.
He is a sex machine.
He's like a sex god.
Okay. So his manager is Irving Azoff and he said he's legendary and we didn't know him. So just a few bands. REO Speedwagon.
Sure.
Dan Fogelberg. Mm. The Eagles.
Oh, come on.
I know. He also produced some movies, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, my God.
Urban Cowboy.
Oh, Jesus.
Jack Frost, Above the Rim. Number two. Okay. He said when he would sneak into bars, IDs didn't have photos on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, according to my research,
uh-oh.
Photo ID appeared in 1876.
Well, okay.
And it said it did not become widely used until the early 20th century.
Okay.
When, nope, still.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's when still before the
photographs became part of passports and other ID documents such as driver's licenses, all of which came to be referred to as photo IDs. But he was definitely alive during photo IDs.
Okay. Well.
I'm sorry.
Well, so Jon Jovi was sneaking into bars. I don't know if you remember, Dex, but as a teenager, I got a paper ID
mm-hmm.
waiting for a regular ID, and we just took a pencil and wrote the different yeah. year, and I went to Kroger.
But it was still grocery your face, store. Right?
Huh?
It was your, was it?
No.
And no, because you get a paper temporary before they process that photo they took of you.
No photo ID, and I bought many of cases of beer.
Interesting. Okay. But they were sending you a photo ID. So yeah. It was like, in the interim, this is what I have. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's interesting.
And also, I'm 6 months older than Aaron. So the second I turned 21, I gave him my license.
Of course.
And said mine was lost and got another one. Yeah. So we would both be Dax Shepard going into places. Yeah.
That happened to me. So in college, I had a fake ID too. But before I got one, I was still in high school. I was 17.
Oh.
And we went to Athens, my college town, to visit for a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And so we knew we could only get into the 18 and up bar.
Right.
But I wasn't even 18.
Uh-huh.
So I had to use, we passed back Callie's ID.
Very white girl.
Very Caucasian.
Caucasoid.
We do not look alike. and it worked.
People just don't
they
care.
Do not
they don't give a fuck. Yeah.
And then I had a paper ID. I never had what you did where you get, like most people had their sister's ID.
Uh-huh.
And no one looked like me, so I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So I had a paper one, and it was really good, and it got me all the way through college, and I was 2 weeks from graduating, and it got taken.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
At what bar?
I think it was called Boar's Head.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Do you know how many times I bought beer and had to explain to the person that my mom named me Dax because it was out of this book she read. And it was a really hard ID to have when your name is Dax.
Yeah.
And I was living in Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
In the mountains in White County. Mm-hmm. And which was an actual dry county, but right outside there where I bought the beer, everyone knew your fucking name.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm Dax while I live in Georgia.
Annoying name, right?
Oh, yeah. Everyone wanted to know.
Yeah. Bet you got sick of it in a hurry.
So many cab rides of all the girls trying to memorize all the parts on the ID.
Oh, like right.
The birthday and where they're from in case they got asked, because they're always somebody's friend of a friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this really silly thing that happened to Aaron and I from, I guess, 17 until 25, we don't look that much alike, do you think?
No.
No, right?
Yeah.
We got asked, I'm saying once every 3 days.
You were brothers?
Not brothers, twins.
Twins?
Twins.
Wow.
People constantly asked if we were twins.
That's crazy. Maybe they just felt it.
I think we were so similar in how we talked and everything.
Yeah.
They thought.
That's cute.
Yeah. We loved it.
Okay, last fact. He thought Bono was the same age, maybe a few months older. Jon Bon Jovi, JBJ, is born in 1962, and Bono was born in 1960. So two years apart. So they are
John,
similar.
Jon Bon Jovi is
older
okay.
by 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
Well, I feel very flattered that that big dog came on our podcast.
Oh, my God. It was a real full circle moment for me.
Mm-mm-mm.
I'm excited to listen.
Well, Aaron, we love you.
Love you.
I love
Monica,
you guys.
I love you.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Shaky fan.